BFM 89.9, The Business Station. My name is Rich Bradbury. I am sitting in for Jeff Sandu on this edition of Geek Squawk with Culture Pop's Matt Armitage. What stories have you brought me today then?
Well, I'm bringing you the brassiere today.
Right.
I know this. I think you said you covered this story a little bit earlier this week.
I did on BizBytes, yeah.
Yeah. I've never been afraid of not being original, so I'm quite happy to do it again. This is a story about Apple and the search terms that are being used in its photo app. So what's been missing from their app for a long time has been just using keyword search to find images in your phone. If you're anything like me, I've got like 8,000-9,000 images on my phone, so it's really hard to find anything. So I've been looking for this kind of AI-influenced categorization of photos for a long time.
Have you?
Yeah. Because I search for things, especially when people ask me, you know, if it's things like, you know, I want to search for things from trips back to the UK or whatever, trips to a gallery or whatever. It can be quite hard to find things, especially when you've got
scroll through.
Got to remember what date you were there and all that kind of thing. And yes, I can use Google Photos, but it's just nice that Apple has included these things. What a lot of people didn't realize until this week was one of the search terms or the categories is the brassiere.
Right.
So you can type in brassiere and it will come up with any images in your photo gallery of said item. Now, I tried that on my phone.
I'm hoping there were a grand total of zero.
There were a grand total of zero. I was kind of disappointed because, one, it shows that the algorithm is pretty accurate.
Right.
And two, it shows that I'm kind of a boring person. Right. So, you know, but that's just me. But a lot of people have been complaining about this in terms of, you know, why is Apple choosing to categorize things like
and it's a very specific search term, right?
Well, it is a very specific search term. I don't really know the reason behind it, whether or not, you know, people want to look for their own bikini shots or whatever. I don't know why. I haven't tried the bikini search, actually. I know my phone will come up with a zero on that one as well. But the difference between the approach that Apple has here and that Google has is that the AI is actually taking place only within your phone. So it's not actually sending the images up to the cloud. It's only doing these searches within your phone. So your data is not actually at risk. It's not being sent to some kind of public forum, and it's not it can't be hacked by somebody else. So
a lot
it is
of people,
secure.
A lot of people were freaking out about that, you know?
A lot of people were freaking out. But the thing is not so surprising that brassiere is included as a term. It's more surprising the things that aren't.
Right.
So I think one of the things we discussed off air is what if you were a urologist, for example, and you want to search for pictures of genitals because
you're a urologist.
You're a urologist. Yeah. That's your job.
Yeah.
So a lot of these search terms are removed because they're considered sensitive or transgressive in some way.
Inappropriate,
yeah. I mean, actually, I tried searching for children and kids and nothing came up.
Right.
You know, I was looking for pictures of my nephew and niece.
Yeah.
And it's strange that those terms are not included, especially as these things only relate to the things you've already taken pictures of.
Right.
It's not like you're mining a Google archive for example. But I think you mentioned how are they expecting the AI to actually improve?
Exactly. So I mean, what they're saying is that your data is not being sent anywhere. But from my understanding of AI, I mean, there's a couple of ways that AI learns, right? Normally, you throw a whole bunch of things at it. For example, 1,000 pictures of brassieres, for example. It learns about these brassieres, and it improves upon its algorithm by sending data back and receiving a cleaner algorithm, right? But if it's not sending data anywhere, how is it improving the functionality and the searching of the AI?
Yeah, well, obviously it has. Apple has said they have a data set of a few hundred thousand images that they've been working from. I imagine what they're doing is just sitting there with Google and going brassiere and seeing what comes up. There is the possibility now. I don't know. I mean, this is just conjecture on my part. A lot of people do actually send their images up to the iPhoto cloud. Although this AI is happening on the phone, a lot of us do choose to archive our images back onto
iCloud. They don't give us a choice most of the time. They say you're running out of space, you know, buy more space.
Yeah, buy more. Yeah, but that's the thing. You can buy more. You have a choice.
Right.
You do have a choice in these things. So it could just be a case that you've haven't gone through your settings and you're not really sure where your information is ending up, which is the case for a lot of us. But it is very important that these algorithms do evolve and change. As we know from the very first versions of the Google Photos, they had the issue with gorillas.
Right.
When you search the term gorillas, it also flagged up people who were African or African American under that same term. So there is a lot of learning to be done. And of course, you know, nobody wants their face to appear under a search term of brassiere.
Right. For me, it was just because I asked one of our producers, Christine, to do this very search on her phone. You know, when you say to somebody, I need you to search for brassiere amongst your photographs, you know, and she's like, why the hell are you asking me to do that?
And I said, you'll get a reputation as the Harvey Weinstein of BFM.
Exactly. You know, but I had to explain to her. I said, you know, I'll send you this article, have a read of this. And her immediate reaction was of panic, you know, and I said, well, we'll read the article first and you'll figure out what it's saying. But I don't know. I mean, what there is no data, so it's potentially sending it off to iCloud. But then what? Then they're improving on it over there.
Who knows? I mean, they may be just buying in batches of images to make it improve. They may not be mining the images are there, but certainly there is a pool of images that are sitting on Apple servers. We would need to get more clarification from the company on that. But it goes back to something that we've come back to on Tech Talk a lot over the years, which is don't take pictures of anything that you don't want people to find.
Yeah.
I've had this conversation with friends, especially things like Snapchat, where they say, no, the image gets deleted after, you know, however many minutes or hours or whatever. Nothing gets deleted in the digital realm. Somebody else can take a shot of someone else's phone. There are all kinds of ways to preserve these images. Things that are created do not just disappear. No. We think that because we lose documents from our computers all the time, they've disappeared from a place that we can recover them. That doesn't mean that they've disappeared. They're not the same thing.
Yeah. Okay, we've got time for another story now before we can take a break, actually. And this is a headline that I read yesterday. And I thought, this would be something that Matt would be interested in. So I'll read you the headline first, right? Wind turbine terror. Dead rabbits were spread at wind farm, presumably to lure eagles. Right? And so I read that, and I'm like, yeah, I want to speak to Matt about this. Because as I'm sure you're aware, there's a movement of the anti-green, whether it be in the U.S., particularly in the U.S. right now, and other countries. And so from what I understand from this article, there is a place, and of course it's in Iowa, in the middle of the U.S., and a local landowner, he'd found 15 rabbits with their necks broken, and they were spread at the base of these wind turbines. And so the theory is that they'd done this to lure these eagles to come in, to you know, and to be hit by these wind turbines, right? And therefore, they could then say, look, see what these wind turbines are doing? They are killing our eagles. The problem is with that, my first thought was, well, eagles don't eat carrion. So you're failing immediately.
Yeah, well, I mean, but again, there are lots of buzzards that are on the endangered lists as well. So there are lots of other birds that could be lured in to do this. There are just some absolutely awful and evil people out there. You know, to take endangered animals and to entice them to an area where they're likely to be shredded. Because let's face it, you know, you're going through a large fan.
Right.
Where they can be shredded by this machine just to prove a political point is absolutely horrendous. And there's a lot of this going on, I think, on every side of the argument. You know, we're we're seeing not just people who are anti the kind of green movement or whatever. There have been cases in the past of sabotage on oil pipelines to create pollution effects that can then be used to show how awful fossil fuels are. People are doing ridiculous things on every side of the argument, and I think it's just about time that we all stopped it. Really.
Stop being a bit silly, right?
Well, it is just a bit daft. I mean, there's I don't know if you've read the reports this week that people on the alt-right are saying that there's going to be an anti-fascist uprising starting in America on Saturday on November the 4th. That every white, potentially every white citizen of America may be assassinated on Saturday with no evidence whatsoever. But this has actually become a big thing, and it's been picked up by some of the larger sites on the alt-right, and of course Alex Jones, the InfoWars guy. There's no evidence for this whatsoever. I mean, when you compare as well the anti-fascist groups and their military might compared to the militia groups on the right, I mean, there's no comparison at all. You know, it's a bunch of students wearing gas masks and throwing kind of gas pellets versus guys who've got complete armories. I mean, the whole thing is just daft. There is not going to be an uprising in the US on Saturday.
I mean, we're talking about research and people doing their research, and it's suggesting that 300,000 birds are lost per year due to wind turbines, right? Just in the US. On the flip side, cats kill tens to hundreds of millions of birds per year. You know?
Oh, I mean, cats, yeah. Cats are absolutely... I mean, I love cats.
I just had to get a cat thing in.
But it's true. They do kill millions and millions of birds. They really have a massive impact, especially on city environments.
Yeah.
New Zealand has a huge problem with feral cats. They have islands that are overrun with feral cats, and they have a lot of flightless bird species. Mm. So this is not a good combination. So there's a campaign at the moment to eradicate feral cats in New Zealand.
Yeah.
Things like wind turbines do have this kind of environmental impact, and we should be looking at marshalling other technologies as well. I think we talked a couple of weeks ago, there are ways of potentially using evaporated water to harness for energy. We should be using a lot more wave power. Obviously, solar power is something that we're using more and more efficiently. So I think wind power is not the be all and end all. Once we get to a point where we can live without it, we should, because there is an impact from these turbines. But birds,
right?
I don't know, maybe we should just put cats on the blades of the wind turbines, and that'll keep the birds
away.
And
it would sound awesome,
I hope my wife doesn't listen to this.
Okay, folks, we're going to take a very short break here on Geek Squawks, but when we come back, we'll be talking about Bitcoin mining and the Russians, as you do.
As you do,
here
yes.
On BFM 89.9, the business station.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, the business station. My name is Rich Bradbury. I am standing in for Jeff Sandu, who should be here in the studio with Matt Armitage from Culture Pop, of course. We've spoken briefly about bras and windmills. Well, not windmills per se, but those big things that generate electricity.
Yes, not windmills and bras as in one subject.
No, two very separate subjects. But you wanted to talk about something to do with Bitcoin mining, right?
Okay. Nobody understands Bitcoin mining.
I kind of do.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, well, you're one. It's a bit like CRISPR for most people.
Right.
We just accept that there's
technology.
It just happens and it works.
Yeah.
Now, it turns out that, Bitcoin mining is very energy intensive.
Yes.
I didn't realize how energy intensive until I saw this report on The New Scientist. And it turns out that Bitcoin mining or cryptocurrency mining currently takes as much energy as the entire country of Ecuador consumes in a year.
What? Really?
Yeah, for sure. It's absolutely incredible. This apparently is partly to do with the nature of the coin itself, the idea that it's a distributed ledger. Mm-hmm. So every transaction has to be cross-referenced with these thousands of different copies.
Every single computer.
That's right. Yeah. So when you're making the currency, your computer is actually doing all this work to create them, he said, making it sound as though he has a clue what he's talking about.
I'm almost convinced. Yeah.
And but it's also checking back with these thousands of other copies of the ledgers.
Yeah.
So this is very, very energy intensive, as we said. So what is starting to happen is a Russian company, is manufacturing space heaters that are combined with these cryptocurrency mining devices.
That is entrepreneurial, though. You know?
Yes, because apparently there is so much heat created by these little servers that you can comfortably heat a room in, you know, subarctic Russia.
Yeah.
To a comfortable level, and make yourself about $300 worth of Ethereum every month. The downside of that is they're selling these space heaters. You know, your normal space heater, you go, it's going to cost you, what, $50-$60? I know in Malaysia you don't really have to buy space heaters particularly. But it's not going to cost you a lot of money. These cost $5,000 because they're packed with top-end GPU and processing chips. So they're operating at a very, very high level. What people are now looking at is trying to change the nature of blockchain itself, because if we are going to adopt, if we're going to move our economies to these kind of cryptocurrencies,
and it's looking
in the
as
future,
though some
and
of
it's
them
looking
are.
As though we are, yes, yeah, yeah. The energy required could be absolutely colossal. So doubling the size of the Bitcoin market, for example, would be equivalent to, I think, consume the energy of something like 5 million U.S. households. So that's an enormous amount of energy just to keep your currency going. You don't really have to worry about the power that's needed to create the ringgit in your pocket, you would with these kind of cryptocurrencies.
And the thing is, as well, is that the more Bitcoin that is mined, the more difficult it becomes to mine what's left, and therefore it pushes up how difficult these algorithms are. Therefore, your temperature will go up, or rather, the consumption of energy will go up.
Yeah, I mean that's being changed by some of the newer currencies.
Vitalik
that are
the Ethereum Foundation is trying to move towards that direction, right?
Yeah. Things that are more flexible and can be open, but it's actually a case of changing the back end to make it less energy intensive. Nobody's really come up with an ideal solution at the moment, because at the moment the way it works is that the ledger checks every single transaction.
Yeah.
So that it means no individual server or computer can create a false ledger and create money that doesn't exist or use money that doesn't exist. We've been talking about situations where it's kind of a verification. So every time there's a transaction, the transaction will verify itself. But the worry is that this favors people who already have the currency versus people who are trying to create more of it or who are outside the system. So it becomes much more of a haves and have-nots situation. So it does seem to be that there is a fundamental redesign needed for these kind of blockchain technologies, especially as we start to use them for other things as well.
For sure.
We're starting to use them for a lot of administration purposes as well.
Yeah.
People are talking about using them for elections. And you don't want, you know, everyone's power to go out because the blockchain is running during an election cycle, for example. So we do have to look at the way these things are controlled if they're going to be used comprehensively moving forward, I think.
I was reading recently about a couple of cryptocurrency-based companies, blockchain-based companies, who were moving to places like Finland, you know, in subarctic temperatures and whatever, to help reduce the cost.
The world's largest cryptocurrency mining company is actually based in Iceland, I think.
Yeah. Which makes sense.
Yeah, it's you know, underground with a glacier on top, which keeps it cold. So we do, like I said, a lot of people are saying, well, we can use renewables to do this. Well, we already know that wind turbines are killing lots of
birds.
Killing lots of birds.
With cats.
So again, you know, every time you want a pint of milk, you have to kill a flock of seagulls. That's not necessarily a great price. You know, that then has to be factored into the cost of your pint of milk as a good.
I don't know. I see it as vengeance for them stealing my ice cream when I was a child. You know.
Yeah. What is it? They get called on late night TV. Beach rats.
Beach rats. Yeah. That's about right. Yeah. So. Earlier today, we talked about social media manipulation in one way or another, and now this is a story that I kind of picked up the other day about how there are allegations that the Russians have been involved, as we know, in feeding Facebook stories and Twitter stories and feeding the frenzy over in the US and causing all kinds of political trouble over there, one way or another. Right? It's everywhere now. I read about how Russia organized two sides of a Texas protest and encouraged both, this in quotes, both sides to battle in the streets. Right? So they organized a protest and this counter protest in the same place at the same time in May 2016. So the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, this guy called Senator Richard Burr, he said this on Wednesday, and this revelation has kind of shown just how far Russia are willing to go, allegedly, I have to keep using that word, to foment unrest and division in the U.S. in the months leading up to the previous U.S. election. And it was basically an anti-Islam and a pro-Islam protest happening in the same place at the same time, all done via this Facebook page called The Heart of Texas, right? Who's linked to Russia. This was kind of first reported by the Business Insider a while ago, and it was happening in Houston, Texas. It was viewed by about 12,000 people. And I don't know, dude. This, you were saying to me off air that there is a Russian guy who essentially has helped or to create, foment unrest. Well, and he looks at it as a performance piece.
Yeah, there's a great article on The Atlantic. It's from back in, I think, 2014, November 7th, 2014. Mm. A guy called Vladislav Surkov, who was an advisor to President Putin.
Right.
And the what doesn't make sense to a lot of people about this is usually when you talk about state actors,
yeah,
you talk about having a specific ideology.
Agenda, yeah.
Agenda.
Yeah.
Now, there is no ideology behind this agenda. This agenda is simply a case of destabilization. So if you look at it as a battle between a David and a Goliath, the Russian economy is not in the same kind of position that the U.S. economy
right.
is in.
Yeah.
Militarily, it is gearing up, but it doesn't have the same kind of strength that the U.S. military has. It doesn't have the same kind of advanced weaponry throughout that the U.S. has. So in that situation, it could see itself as not being equal in the fight. So you look at other ways of kind of destabilizing.
It's like guerrilla tactics almost.
Well, in a sense. So you have a country like the US that likes to be seen as the kind of global peacemaker. Mm. So you try and stir up trouble across the world. And this guy, Vladislav Surkov, his background is actually in the kind of Russian theater and performing arts. And he sees this as kind of an anarchist, Dadaist performance art piece. You give money to absolutely everybody, just little bits of money to help stir up unrest, a little bit of trouble. It diverts people's attention. It stops things from being stable anywhere, and that allows you to advance your own agenda or to carry on your own political maneuvering kind of unnoticed, because everybody's attention is fixed elsewhere. It is an absolutely fascinating article, because even though it is from a while ago, you can see how all of this has gone from things that were being played out across the Balkans to things that are now being played out across the
right,
US.
Right.
So we've seen like the attacks on the cyber attacks on Estonia, I think back in 2006, 2007, cyber attacks in Ukraine, also these kind of other groups. A lot of things have been going on in the Balts, like Estonia and Lithuania and Latvia, in terms of groups that are given little bits of money or given little bits of
this support. Whole thing costs $200, by the way.
Oh no, it doesn't. But that's the whole point. It doesn't. It doesn't cost very much money to do all of this. It's all about having the ability and the knowledge. I mean, that's one of the reasons I was saying that in the last piece. It's the openness of platforms like Facebook and Twitter that has been subverted because they're very open to this.
This kind of manipulation.
This kind of manipulation. And that's why there has to be a lot more focus. That's why I think that they have to take a lot more notice of political and socially motivated content on the on the sites, because there can be an agenda from other countries coming from behind it.
There was one little bit just before we move on to your geek tune. Was this one person who attended this event said, you know, we couldn't find anybody from the heart of Texas. And, you know, well, of course not, because they're busy trolling you from St. Petersburg, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, once you get people in place, especially if you've got people's emotions up really, really high, you don't actually need any actors on the ground.
You don't need anything else, yeah.
No, exactly. Yeah. You only need to have this cyber presence to create all of this. And that's one of the kind of the cleverest things about all of this is that a lot of this is carried out in English, and English is a universal language. The number of people on the American side who speak Russian or Arabic or any of these other languages, so it limits the ability of countries like Russia or Britain or any of the European powers to do the reverse kind of actions. Yeah. And plus, we know that countries like Russia do have ways of cutting off from the internet. They do have that potential to shut down communications in the way that the West doesn't. So it is a very, very clever strategy.
Yeah.
And honestly, I would advise anyone who's interested in this to look for the article, The Hidden Author of Putinism, on The Atlantic. It's an article from 2014, and it will literally blow your mind.
Lovely. Right. Give me some music.
Today's Geek Tune, we have not the latest track, but a new track from Charlotte Gainsbourg. She is the daughter of Jane Birkin and Serge Gainsbourg, two heavyweight music talents. She's also known as an actor. She was in the Michel Gondry movie about sleep. Can't remember what it is.
Yeah.
She's also a director and all kinds of stuff. She's made a few albums in the past. She made some very dodgy singles with her dad when she was a child, which we can't mention on air. But this is from her new album. This is Rest by Charlotte Gainsbourg. BFM 89.9.